Sounding great and feeling really straight, it's time once again for the show that emanates from two different corners of the place we call Gitmo Nation. Coming to you from Gitmo Nation, East and South West London in the Curry Terrace. I'm Adam Curry.
I'm John C. Dvorak here in Northern Silicon Valley in the Gitmo Nation.
Howdy, my friend.
Well, we just did a show on Thursday. And now we're doing one. I think we're going to move this one, though, for people out there who want to know.
Move
probably
to Sunday?
Sunday.
Why is that?
Well, I think it's because you got Thursday, Friday, Saturday, then Sunday show, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And, you know, I think it breaks it up better.
Better
you get
balance.
That one extra day. Weird things happen on Saturday.
Well, you, I don't know. A lot of covert decisions are made on Sundays. You know, like
I don't
want
to do it on Monday, so
No. Well, it's okay. I must say, though, I noticed that when we did the show on Thursday, you were in a much more awakened state than on the weekend. And myself as well, probably.
Awakened
state. Yeah, like we were really, you know, it's different.
Because we didn't get plastered the night before, you
know. Says you. we were talking just before the show started, and of course, then I said, oh, let's just get the show rolling. Because you're outraged, and I just want to kind of feed you and just pour more fuel on the fire, because I really need a good, solid JCD rant.
Okay, here we go. Ready?
Do I get to interject, or do I just sit back and listen for the whole
rant? No, you can throw in anything you want. You're not
okay,
going to get much
let me say, yeah, let me say, yeah. Hey, John, how about that SEC?
Yeah, how about that SEC? Okay, here we go.
No, man, I gave you a cue.
Here we go. Now, let me just, here's what set me off.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading this 4-page article on Reuters about savings lost to Madoff, elderly forced back to work, talking about how some 90-year-old guy has to, you know, work at McDonald's and all that kind of thing.
Because Madoff lost his pension fund money.
Yeah.
Right.
And the list is out, by the way, and we blogged it.
Yep.
And you can get links to it. It's been linked by, you know, but it's been pulled down from a couple of the sites.
Yeah, thank you for the link. I downloaded it. What is it, like 350 names on there?
No, it's more than that. It's like 160 pages.
No, I'm sorry, 650 names.
No. It's more
than
that? It's 160 pages, and each page has about 50, 60 names on it each. Thousands.
Jesus Christ. Unbelievable. And all with addresses and...
Yeah, the cool thing is it has a search engine, the PDF file does.
Yeah.
And you can look up the city. You can look up London, for example, see how many people in London were burned.
I got a laugh out of Beverly Hills. That was kind of funny.
Beverly Hills, a bunch of Beverly Hills. Of course, the real concentration is New York City.
Yeah.
2,000 people in New York City alone, or something like that.
Yeah.
And also a lot in Boca Raton and Palm Beach.
Yeah, the retirees. So you're reading this list and you're thinking, hmm.
Well, no, I'm actually reading this list looking for people. Arthur Rock's name showed up. One of the original venture capitalists who invested in Apple in its early days.
Oh, okay. All right.
And what's also kind of pathetic about that list, you start looking at it and it's like, you know, you see the name of the husband, the name of the wife, yeah, and the name of the family trust.
Yeah. Yeah. Big word there on Wall Street, trust. Yeah, we love those.
Family trust. I guess you have, your family is now out of business.
Yeah, kaput.
So, all right, so I read this. This is what set me off. This is the last two paragraphs of this long article. After losing money to Madoff, Lawrence Vavell, dean of the Massachusetts School of Law, said both the U.S. Securities Exchange Commission and the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority could be held liable for investors' losses. Quote, the brokerage industry is responsible for this because they are the people that caused all of this, he said.
Hmm.
So I'm thinking, oh, wait a minute. Are you telling me that because of these boneheads, and I sent you a picture of Linda Thompson and her cohort.
I wouldn't hire them in my company.
Two lawyers, by the way, who don't know anything. I want you to go to that photo, which I sent.
Yeah.
I got it here. Read that little caption. Mm-hmm.
SEC officials Lori Richards left and Linda Thompson described how the SEC has not been able to keep up with the increasing complexity of the financial markets.
In other words, they can't keep
up. No, they can't keep up. Of course
not. Lawyers.
What's the name on the left? Lori Richards. She looks like she has to take a massive dump in this picture.
You ought to see pictures of the other one. Anyway, but meanwhile, they can go after Martha Stewart.
John, hold on a second. Let me get you a little more incensed. Don't you think that it is perhaps possible that they're protecting Madoff because he's, you know, lots of people had to know. The Madoff thing is a fractal, John. It's a fractal of the entire financial markets.
Oh, yeah, no, there's something hokey going on. And there's also an SEC person involved in the Madoff family.
Of course.
But beside the point, I'm actually of the opinion that this is just bureaucratic incompetence. And people is put into a job and they know, since they're professional bureaucrats, that all they really have to do is sit back, make a little stink here and there, go after Martha Stewart, get a lot of ink for that. By the way, so I did a calculation on Martha Stewart's, horrible crime compared to this thing. And just to give people a little idea of this, Martha Stewart was going to, what she had done wrong was listen to her stockbroker tell her that the daughter of this CEO was selling all the stock of the company that she held some stock in, and so she decided to sell. That's the whole thing. That's right, the whole right. major crime.
Right. And it was what, $67,000 or something?
No, it was $45,673.
Dude, people are in jail for life because they got caught smoking marijuana three times. Come on. I mean, yes, of course. It's crazy.
So the factor between Madoff's scam, and Madoff, by the way, is still out.
Yeah, Park Avenue home arrest.
Is $1.09 million, like thousands of degrees of magnitude. And I decided, how am I going to compare Martha Stewart's great crime that these two women, by the way, the woman Thompson was the main person after Stewart. If you read her bio, she was taking great pride in busting Martha Stewart. The factor is, if you take the Earth to the sun's diameter, it's 100 to 1. This is 10,000 suns compared to the Earth. 10,000 suns compared to the Earth. That is the difference between Martha Stewart, who ended up in jail, and this crime that was handed to them on a silver platter, apparently time after time. They refused to do anything about it. So now I'm reading that the taxpayers may be liable for this. So I look into this. Well, then again, I'm going to look at the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. Who was the head of that thing from, 2006 to 2009?
Oh, man, I can't wait to hear it.
Mary Shapiro. Mary Shapiro was the head of that operation. She should have had something to do with it. What is Mary Shapiro doing now? She was appointed by Obama to be the head of the SEC.
Oh, hold on.
Obama! We are the people of America!
United for our country!
Obama.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And what kind of change is this? This woman, Mary Shapiro, who you can look up her picture, she has been essentially a bureaucratic hack working with Clinton's administration, George H.W. Bush administration, Ronald Reagan. She was actually the chair of the SEC temporarily under Reagan. She has always been in one of these positions. Then she took over the FIRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, and she was in there from 2006 to 2009. She should have done something about Madoff. She did nothing. And meanwhile, now she's the head of the SEC. And she's exactly the same as these other women, a lawyer with no financial background
whatsoever. Well, this further solidifies.
How is this change?
Well, this further solidifies what I've been saying for over a year now, and others for much, much longer, that it's a wrestling match. It's like professional wrestling. We get these two parties. We got the guy in the red cape, the guy in the blue cape, and they pretend to wrestle around, and we're gonna say this is the guy we want to win. But it's the same people behind all of this. There is no change. It's exactly the same people from the past two administrations who are in there wreaking havoc.
I think everything- just wreaking is the word. Now, I guarantee you that the U.S. taxpayers are going to get stuck with a $50 billion bill.
This is the scam, John. This is the scam. The scam is, and I bet you a lot of people of those thousands of names on the list are in on the scam, where, first of all, this money went somewhere. It didn't all go into Madoff's pocket, okay? I've seen the yachts. I've always wondered, how can some motherfucker afford a yacht like that? And I've seen the wealth. It is just outrageous. The wealth was flowing. Now they blow it all up because they had to. It's a part of, I guess, a plan. And then everyone gets the payout anyway. Everyone gets their money back. It's a Ponzi on top of a Ponzi. It's fucking beautiful.
Well, in the meantime, of course, there's a few people that are going to have to wait to get their money. These 90-year-old farts who are not working at McDonald's. Anyway, I just found it unbelievable that the woman who headed up the other regulatory agency that was supposed to take care of this and could be liable for this losses ends up as the head of the SEC. These other two women, these other two lawyers, Thompson and whatever, Lori, they were the enforcement, oh, by the way, one's the enforcement officer and the other, compliance or something. Where are some financial people that know what they're doing instead of just these lawyers? I'm not getting it.
Well, the whole White House is now filled with lawyers. The first lady and the president are lawyers.
Yeah.
It's all lawyers.
I guess the whole country's gotten lawyered up.
But it really hit me this week, John, I think after we spoke on Thursday, that Madoff is just a fractal. My fractal recognition program went off, and I went, of course. This is just a small part of this entire pyramid, which is the financial industry. The whole thing is a scam. Everywhere I look, it doesn't add up. The numbers don't add up. It doesn't make sense.
Meanwhile, by the way, that woman... Here she is, Mary Shapiro. If anybody, I don't know who subscribes to Equities magazine, but she's on the cover. She was the cover girl. Mary Shapiro in the new Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. After taking the top job at the NASD in September of 2006, Mary Shapiro sculpted its consolidation with NYSE regulation to create a stronger, more efficient regulatory body. Shapiro now serves as the CEO of the newly formed Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, which oversees 5,100 securities brokers dealers doing business in the United States.
Unbelievable. And they're the ones that are supposed to have the real oversight, right?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So that's my rant for the day. I sent that picture of that you see there on the Twitter. Mm-hmm. I sent that out to. I said, look at these two women. That's all I said. the ones responsible.
I get a bunch of
flack back from a bunch of women. So what are you, a sexist ageist?
Jesus Christ. So Timothy Geithner, I saw his first press conference. Now that he's been confirmed as Secretary of the Treasury. Did you happen to catch
C-SPAN?
It? Yeah, C-SPAN, of course.
No, I know. I haven't gotten on the C-SPAN bandwagon like you have.
Well, listen to his first meeting. It was a meeting of the President's Working Group on Financial Markets, better known as the Plunge Protection Team. Now...
Do you have a clip?
No, because he barely said anything. It was so funny because, again, C-SPAN just does raw with no commentary. And so you just see them all waiting there and the photographers are waiting. And then, so the camera's already rolling for about 3 or 4 minutes before he finally gets the cue. And then he says, and then he starts off. But, it's just a photo op. He says nothing. It's that long table that they always sit at in their conference room, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I will, while we're on that tip, let me bring up a list here, which we do need to discuss, because it goes perfectly with these two women. The White House, I love whitehouse.gov as well, because they have press releases, which is cool, just like a company, which of course it really is. For immediate release, February 6, 2009, Obama announces Economic Advisory Board. I hope you caught a whiff of this list, John.
No.
So, again, I saw it on C-SPAN, and there was our president, and he had a whole bunch of people, and I recognized a few of the faces, which we'll get to. And he said, these are the people. Let's see if I have a quote here, actually. The Economic Recovery Advisory Board. Economic Recovery Advisory Board will provide regular briefings to the president, vice president, and their economic team. The board will be established initially for a two-year term, after which the president will make a determination on whether to extend the work of the board. And it was funny, and I wish I did have the sound clip. At a certain point, you know, Obama says, well, these people here, you know, a lot of them all think they're economists. Big laugh. And he says, but some of them actually are economists. And it was funny. It was a fucking great little stand-up, you know, great script. And he was reading, obviously. So here are the members of the board.
Okay, I pulled it up.
William H. Donaldson, chairman of the SEC from 2003 to 2005.
Oh, overseeing Madoff.
Yeah, okay. Roger Ferguson Jr., president and CEO of the TIAA. That's the Teachers Association, I think.
You think?
Yeah, isn't it?
Well, hold on a second.
TIAA, I think that's the teachers. Well, let's move on because
give me the list. I'll look that up.
Okay. Robert Wolf, chairman and CEO of UBS, a banker. Okay. Yeah. The CIO of Yale University.
Oh, actually, the TIAA is the Teachers Insurance and Annuity Association.
Okay. Well,
and the College Retirement Equities Fund.
Let's just skip to the good ones, such as Jeffrey R. Immelt, CEO of GE. This is fascism. This is how it happens.
Yeah, corporatism, right?
Corporatism, and it's moving into fascism. GE, which, of course, makes the stupid mercury-filled light bulbs that are being forced in our ass, but owns MSNBC, CNBC, NBC. Which ones am I missing? I mean, and who probably will get a bailout from the government. It's just, that's outrageous. Now, here he is, our buddy, John Doerr, partner of Kleiner, Perkins, Caulfield, and Byers. He finally got into some kind of post.
He did, but yeah. I don't think that's what he was
I don't think he was.
For.
So it goes down, then there's the CEO of Caterpillar, the chief executive officer of La Opinion. I don't know. Is that market research? Then there's Charles Phillips Jr., president of Oracle Corporation. And they do have two economists, Laura Dandrea Tyson, dean, the Haas School of Business at University of California, Berkeley, of course, and Martin Feldstein, who's professor of economics at Harvard. So they've basically got corporate America and then two token economists thrown in.
Right, and a couple of token venture capitalists or Silicon Valley people, so they can get that out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, because they're indebted to them. So this, hey, what else you want? That would be an interesting meeting to be at, because Doerr is very kind of outspoken.
And he really believes.
Yeah, totally.
He's a real believer. And we knew something was going to happen because, you know, he asked if he could be let off the board of Nevio, because he's basically cutting back a lot of his board work and he's really going into this full time.
Interesting. So did you let him off?
Yeah, we replaced him with Bing Gordon.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So I think I found somewhat of a smoldering, if not smoking gun, John.
All right, go. By the way, can I just go back to my rant just to mention one more interesting
please.
Little tidbit?
Anytime you
about,
wish.
About Mary Shapiro, while she was the chairwoman of the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority and now head of the SEC, she happens to be a member of the board of directors of Duke Energy and Kraft's Food. How does that work?
Is she, of course, I mean.
How can you be a board member while you're on a regulatory authority? Isn't that the definition of a conflict of interest?
Yeah, but she gets a waiver for that.
Oh, yeah, okay. Anyway,
she will recuse herself.
I don't want to harp on this. Maybe she's the nicest person in the world. I don't know. Anyway, go
well,
back
she's
to
just
you.
She's just another tool. That's all. Just another little tool. And by the way, for all the people who are emailing me, let's just get one thing straight. I did not vote for John McCain. I thought he was just as bad as Obama. The Republicans and Democrats are the same thing. They work for the same people. So stop emailing me about that, like, you know, well, it would have been worse if McCain had won.
Worse.
Jesus, you don't get with the program. So if you look at the chart of the Dow Industrial Average, John, then I would like you to pull it up. Finance.yahoo.com, I guess, is the easiest. You can just click on that chart. So give me the date when the crash took place.
Oh, I can tell you right now, it's November 20th.
No. It's before that. When did the slide start?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the bottom. The bottom was November 20th. By the way, people are all upset about calling the bottom. I have about two. I made about three bets.
Yeah.
I have a problem with gambling, but I made about three bets because one guy writes.
I told you what it's going to be. And I will be right, but we'll get to that later. 7286 by February 14th. That was my long number. I called it in October. So when did the slide start?
Oh, okay. Let me bring up the chart. Hang on.
You really have to do a full year chart to see it, but then it's pretty obvious.
I have to sign in to get to what I'm looking for here.
Jesus. Just...
Well, you should give me a warning or a heads up on some of this stuff. You know, like send me a little list of, hey, do this and do that.
No, I want to command you on at my will. At my beckon. Well, you work for me, remember?
You're boring the public with this bullshit. Dow Jones Industrial Average. Let's look at the basic tech analysis and let's look at the 2-year chart. All right, so we had a couple of interesting. This is a very funny chart because it was at 14,000 back in September of 07, September, October, November, maybe. Then it took a dive, as it would do. And then in January of 08, it dived and bounced off of 12,000 a couple of times, made a little what they would like to call a bull trap. Which means the market looks like it was going up and it decided to go just the other way. And then it came down, I guess it started in May, I would say from this June, maybe June 08, it took its first dive. And then it took a huge dive. The big one was in October.
Right, thank you. Took you long enough to get there. Press release.
Well, October is always the traditional month for this kind of thing.
From the FederalReserve.gov website, October 6, 2008. The Federal Reserve Board on Monday announced it will begin to pay interest on depository institutions' required and excess reserve balances. This is what happened, John. This is where the credit crunch came from. The Fed, for the first time, and as far as I know, ever, started to pay interest on deposits, which is in the Federal Reserve banking system, banks can lend out a factor. Well. It used to be 10, but it's probably 30 or 40 by now, amount of money they had in reserve, and they put that money in the reserve bank, but they didn't get interest on it. So as of October 6th, the Fed started paying, I think, 75 basis points interest on not only the required reserve, but any excess reserve balances. Now, I haven't done all the research yet, but I'm pretty sure the Fed's balance sheet has ballooned to an extraordinary amount, because all these banks, they took that money, they took the TARP money, and they just deposited it with the Federal Reserve to get more interest and with more security than anywhere else. I call this a smoking gun.
Wow. I'll give you 10 points on that one. That's a pretty good theory.
And
I like it.
It scares me. This scares the bejesus out of me.
So all they have to do to fix the economy is saying we're not going to give interest
anymore. That's all they have to do to get the credit flowing. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And think about it. I mean, I don't know what it is now, but 75 basis points, I know it's not very high. But if it's from the Fed, you know, shit, yeah, I'm going to put my money. I wish I could put my money in there.
It's free money.
Totally free money. But not just for the required amount, but for any excess. Oh, my God. So this is, you know, all these things make me think more and more. This is architected.
Yeah, well, it would make some sense. Architected is, you know, now we're going to have, that's why, by the way, if that's true, which is a really interesting concept, although, of course, we had all these other weirdnesses, but we got like cheap oil now. I mean, things should be booming. If that's true, and it can be reversed so quickly, because if you look at that chart in October, that sucker took a dive.
It went in a week.
It looked like a real crash.
Yeah, remember we had 700 points, then 600 points, 300 points,
it was huge.
Boom, boom, boom.
And so if that's true, then the theory that a number of us have that we could have a rally this year or a bull market even this year holds up. Because if they put the, you know, they just pull the trigger on that. No, we're not going to give you interest anymore. We never did that before. We're not going to do it again. It doesn't seem. And now they could point back maybe and say, well, look what it did. It wasn't a good idea. And then stop doing it.
I don't think people know about it. No one talks about
it. They do now.
Well, yeah.
I'm going to harp on it. I'm going to bring it up with Horowitz the next time I talk with him.
Thank you. Please do.
And we'll see what he says.
Please do.
But that was a good find.
Well, you know, you got to listen to
it. Sometimes sometimes you can do that. You can go and look at the circumstances of an anomalous crash. I mean, the situation we're in is very unusual. And you can just go look at what news of the day took place. Was there anything, you know, when they had that crash back in 2000, you know, there may have been a connection between that and the Justice Department going after Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bill Gates says that's what was going to happen. And so if you find that the news of that, you might find that there's some just little thing, or even though this is not little, it's major, that triggered the whole thing, and people are blaming it on everything else. And again, this brings us back to the situation with the oil run-up. People were dreaming up all this malarkey, this baloney about, oh, shortage, there's not enough oil in the world. Peak oil,
we're all going to die.
And the rest of it, when the whole thing was rigged, and there's a number of people who knew it was rigged, and they've said it was rigged. Well,
do you know what the biggest oil company is? You know what truly the biggest American oil company is?
It's Lehman Brothers or somebody like that.
Yeah, Morgan Stanley, exactly. Yeah. Morgan Stanley.
Yeah, that's just a trick question. Anyway.
Yes, I didn't get you this time. I will. Curses.
Anyway, so they had, so you get this baloney that's fed to the public, and they all eat it up and buy Priuses and, you know, turn off their lights, which they should do anyway. And then, of course, the scam is unveiled, and they do a little regulatory changes.
Oh, of course. Well, no, then it's, it was this one company who was doing all this hedging and short selling and blah, blah, blah. They make up some bullshit.
And then the thing drops like a rock.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're being scammed. Well, it's unbelievable.
Well, I just want to get
rigged. The whole thing. And, I've been
rigged
in the market forever because I kind of put myself through college.
Because you've been around forever.
That's right, Sonny.
They're white folks, and then they're ignorant motherfuckers like you.
I stepped on that. Do it again.
They're white folks, and then they're ignorant motherfuckers like you.
So we'll get to that clip later and where that came from.
Couldn't resist.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, I it's almost as good as... In the morning.
The thing is, you know, that I was always told from the get-go is it's rigged.
Really?
You got to be on the right side of the rigged job.
Of course you got to be on the right side
of the
rigged
job.
And the
whole game with the stock market is just trying to outguess how it's being manipulated. I mean, there are, you know, legitimate things that do take place once in a while, but generally speaking, what we're watching here is just a scam. And, you know, then they got these huge yachts, and they don't give a shit about some 90-year-old man having to work at McDonald's.
Listen, if all the banks went bust, right, completely gone, it would only take 400 points off the Dow, right? And it's a big industry, but it wouldn't impact everything that much. However, to then see that this industry, you know, we talked about last week, that pumped $147 billion in bonuses in 2007, come on! I'm no college graduate, but even I can see that doesn't add up.
So anyway, all right, enough of this.
All right, so let me get to something already. PolitiFact.com has something they call the Obameter, which you really should take a look at.
I like the Obameter.
The Obameter, yeah. And what they're doing is they're tracking his campaign promises.
Oh, yeah, I've seen this.
Right. So I pulled it up this morning to take a look and see how he was doing, our president. And he has held onto a lot of things, kind of, but a really important one was the sunlight before signing promise to reduce bills rushed through Congress and to the president before the public has the opportunity to review them. Obama, quote, will not sign any non-emergency bill That, of course, is the key. Without giving the American public an opportunity to review and comment on the White House website for 5 days. Well, that is exactly the opposite of what's happened. The S-chips, as an example. Of course, the Ledbetter bill. Not that anyone, you know, but I would have liked to have seen it. You know, the promise was 5 days and you get to comment on the website. That's just not there. And now, of course, he's literally, you know, did his Friday thing, which the markets, I guess, have now baked into their numbers by pumping the Dow up 200 points. You know, he said in no uncertain terms, catastrophe if we don't sign a bill. Catastrophe. Disastrous. And I think that kind of goes against the sunlight before signing thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't even remember that sunlight before signing, but I can...
Well, this website is good.
You can take that promises list and just throw it out the window. Yeah. There's going to be a few no-brainers that he's going to obviously get off the checklist. I've seen this list. It's huge.
Yeah, 500.
The guy made more promise. It was unbelievable. It's like whatever audience he went to, he made some promise, you know, aimed at getting their vote. He can't keep up with this. I mean, there's no way. There's way too many of them, and it's like he couldn't do it in two terms.
Well, here's one I've been waiting for. $3,000 tax credit for companies that add jobs. That was a big one. That was part of his middle class saving thing.
Well, that must be in the plan that they're trying to pass, right?
No, it's not in the plan.
But that doesn't make any sense. He promised it.
Hold on.
Wait, my bitch nigga, buy your own damn fries.
You better explain where that's coming from, otherwise we'll be deemed racist.
Okay, here's the deal. There's a website, and I've linked, I guess I haven't blogged it yet.
No, anyway, thank you. I appreciate it. I was watching, like, I'm not going to do this on No Agenda if you blog it before the show.
Okay, well, I'm blogging it today.
Yeah, go for it.
Anyway, so it turns out, and there's this website, this woman's website. It's a pretty good site. It's kind of political, and she doesn't seem to like Obama, which makes sense. Apparently, Obama did the read of his own books for audiobooks.
Yep.
And this is Obama's voice, but he's not, you know, it's not him. He's quoting people that he was raised with, and, you know, especially this one colorful character who liked to cuss a lot.
But he has to read.
By the way, I played these clips to Andrew Grummet, who says that, and who read the book, and he says, he says there's choicer material in there. If we get a hold of the MP3,
get the audio book,
we can pull out these clips, and they're all quite funny. And because it's Obama, you know, in the case of these profanities, there was one character that he keeps quoting, and of course taken out of context, which we're doing.
Yes,
they're quite
folks,
humorous.
They're ignorant motherfuckers like you.
That's one of the better ones, I think. But
it ties right into my Tom Swift audiobooks, because now I don't feel bad about doing the accent as intended in the book.
I think you should.
Yeah.
My bitch nigga.
Wouldn't it be cool if he just stood, you know, now this would really make my head twist and turn and flip around if he, on one of his C-SPAN morning shows, the president got up there and said, listen, this bitch has got to pass. Come on, motherfuckers, get some going. Now, then I would be like, okay, there is hope.
Well,
I would have hope.
Yeah, you would, but that's not going to happen. I don't think Obama, even in his own circles,
speaks like that.
I think everybody kind of says this. What you see with this guy, the way he's very. He pauses a lot, and he says,
Yeah, because he has to read the next line.
Look,
and, listen.
And he appears thoughtful. He's not a guy who, you know, I know a lot of black people who, you know, they kind of drop into when they're around their buddies, you know, their fishing buddies, they kind of drop into a slang style.
Of course it does. And when I'm hanging out with black people, then I also get, when I was hanging out with Kevin Epstein and his whole crew, it's automatic. It's normal. And, you know, then you just start, you even can use the N word in that situation.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. So, anyway, that's the,
Kevin Epstein thought it was pretty funny. Of course, we were.
Well,
we were,
if you did it right, I suppose you'd get it right.
We were also all pretty hammered, so kind of worked out that way.
Probably helps, yeah. Anyway, so those clips are probably going to go around. You know, I think they've already been turned into a couple of rap songs.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, that's got to be sampled. Yeah. And, oh, yes,
yeah,
beautiful.
Yeah, that was sampled. In fact, the other thing, which we don't have a clip of here, but we, you know, I hate to even play it because it's so profane, is the Christian Bale.
That's fantastic. I love that. What a dick.
We posted that on Cage Match, which you can go to at cagematch.dvorak.org. And we posted it there. I didn't want to post it on the blog because I just think it's so completely out of line that, you know, I just didn't want to I don't want to hear it again. I mean, it was this guy. He sounded like a psycho going ballistic, which is the interesting part. But the amount of vitriol. I mean, this guy has got some issues.
So the people who don't know what we're talking about, if you haven't heard about it by now, because, of course, this is the news that everyone talks about. Even my compatriot, John C. Dvorak, seems to be consumed by it. Christian Bale was on the set of Terminator, the new Terminator movie.
Yeah.
And someone walks into the shot or...
It was behind the scenes. It was in his eye. It was in his eye line.
Right. Yeah, he's just walking around. Yeah. And the guy just goes off.
And the joke of it is, I love reading the comments on some of these websites because people defend him. Well, you know, he's a serious actor and he was in the mood and that he lost it. He lost the sense of himself. Yeah. And somebody else says, hey, dude, this is Terminator. This is not King Lear.
It's not Shakespeare.
God.
All you have to say is, I'll be back. Hey, people in the chat room are even saying the same thing, John. Well, maybe he was in character. Oh, please. He's just an asshole. There are assholes in the world, you know?
Let's face reality. Yeah,
there are assholes. And this guy sounds like... Go ahead.
The guy's not that great of an actor.
Well, I haven't seen him enough of his work, but you know, if you think Entourage is just a joke, no, that's the way it is. Hollywood is just one big asshole community.
Yeah.
And people on top kick the people. It's just the way it works, you know? That's why they get along so well with Washington. You just have show business for pretty people and show business for ugly people. And they're all assholes. Of course, individually, they're not always, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, a lot of them are still.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get along with a few of them.
Limited quantities.
Yeah, in limited quantities, as long as you have, something more sensible.
So I've been thinking about this smart grid that we're going to spend all this money on. And you and I actually, when we first looked at the president's economic recovery, what was it, kind of blueprint before it became whatever it is at this moment, because I'm sure it's still being worked on, there was all this talk about a smart grid. And... You know, and I think you and I both agreed, you know, that's what do we need to do, you know, spend all this billion, it was like $90 billion or $100 billion on the smart grid. And I got some feedback from engineers mainly who say, well, you know, our grid really sucks and, you know, there's much more efficient ways of transporting, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden I'm thinking, no. Now I know what the smart grid is. The smart grid, and I believe MIT has a part in this. If you look, and this is coming from the conspiracy circles, but it sounds, I haven't done all the research yet, but it sounds right on. The smart grid means that they will actually be able to tell you or perhaps even control your heating and your lights and know exactly how much you're using per device. And I believe will be used against us to say, you know, hey, no heat for you, Dvorak, and it gets shut down.
You said something bad about Mary Shapiro? Hey. Yeah. What do you think about 40 degrees in your house, punk?
And oops, there goes your router. I mean, what else could a smart grid mean? Doesn't that just sound Death Star to you, man? Smart grid? I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. Crackpot and the buzzkill.
Yeah, we got to get those jingles going. I'm writing them. I'll write them this weekend.
I told you if you'd write them, I'd get them produced.
We'll get them produced. I'll do it. I got a couple ideas.
Hey, big shout out to our listeners down under, some of whom are burning, literally. Australia's just a mess, or at least I believe Victoria.
Oh, really? What's going on?
Oh, man, it's like 46 degrees. The shit's on fire. The towns are literally just burning up because of the heat. I'm like, not kidding, man. You haven't looked at this?
46 centigrade is what Fahrenheit?
Let's ask Google.
No, well, yeah, you could ask. It's amazing. Yeah. Google doesn't have the answer.
How much is 46 degrees Celsius? And I get the conversion. Oh, wait a minute. I'll just say in Fahrenheit.
105 is 41.
It's 114.8 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right.
114, 115 degrees. Shit is igniting spontaneously.
You know, it's 115 in Phoenix all the time. These people are just not used to it.
Right. No, of course they're not.
By the way, have you ever been in Phoenix when it's 115?
Yeah, you want to kill yourself. You want to put on a Leonard Cohen record and drag the toaster into the bathtub. It's just no, it's horrible.
It's not that bad. It's a dry heat. Mm. But anyway, what's weird about it, and people who it's like the worst experience getting in and out of your car.
Oh, yeah.
Because the car steering wheel becomes red hot and the seats become red hot. If you leave the car outside in the open, which you have to do because there's not a lot of overhangs anywhere in Phoenix. It's just a big giant strip mall. Hmm. And so you leave your car out to run inside to do something, and within 5 or 10 minutes, the car is so hot inside, it's unbelievable, and you've left the windows open. And so you have to reach into the car and turn it on, hoping not to touch, especially the back, the bottom part of your arm, forearm, and touch the steering wheel. You get a burn right on the arm. Yep. You got to reach in, and you got to start the engine and turn on the air conditioner and let it run for about 5 or 10 minutes before you get in, and it's still hot.
Yep.
What a life.
And you have to move the dead carcass of your dog to the side.
Before you can, if you had a dog, he's dead for sure.
Before you can actually drive. But I feel bad, man, because we've got a lot of listeners in Australia. Because those guys are under fire. They're under fire. Literally, so
this is the middle of summer for them. So I guess this is like July for us.
Can I just bitch about our president a little bit more?
Well, since we're on the weather, I was going to ask you about the snow over there. But, yeah, go ahead.
Let me do the snow. That's a good one because, yeah, that is kind of fun.
Yeah, last time we did the show on Thursday, Mimi says to me, did you ask him about the snow? Because we have a friend out in
Cornwall. Yeah, I told you about the snow cock the kids built, didn't I?
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, they were out there for 4.5 hours, and they said, Dad, well, my daughter and her boyfriend. And then they said, come look what we built. And they built like a 5-foot penis, erect penis out of snow right in front of the... I sent you a picture.
I didn't get the picture.
No, it's on my Flickr site.
It's disgusting.
Well, it was there for 3 days. By the second day, one of the neighbors had thrown a plastic bag over the head, which made it even funnier. Which made it even funnier.
That is funny.
And
now that's funny.
Yeah, I think I got good neighbors. I do.
Now you'll see. You'll see when there's a brick in the window.
So Zurich is laughing. Hold on. I'm looking at the Financial Times, the weekend edition. Now, Zurich is laughing because, you know, Zurich is also a financial center. And London, basically just shut down for certainly for 2 full days. And now the northern part of the country, starting at Wales and going up north. Wales is to the west, of course. But that kind of that line. Where Wales starts, has had, in some places, up to 0.5 meter of snow. And all these councils and municipalities have run out of grit. So there's, and everything starts to melt, and then it freezes up. Now, right now, it's -2 centigrade here in London. So it freezes up, and then you can't drive on them because they have nothing to...
Right, it's a mess. Now, our friends out in Cornwall, I don't know if you've been out there, but, you know, they don't...
I try to avoid Cornwall.
There's not... They have these walled roads. There's no... It's just like a one-lane road with a wall.
That's impossible to navigate right now. It's impossible.
So, no, they had these plows that came through, but they're not the kind of plows with a V. They're just a push plow, so they push, and then there's just this huge 10-foot-high pile of snow at the end of this narrow, walled road. So anybody going out, they dead end, and then you can't get out.
You can't get out of your own driveway. They've plowed those up. What drives me nuts, though, you sent me a link about this the day before I left San Francisco. We knew this 4 days ahead of time that this was coming. We knew it would hit. We knew it would hit London, and these idiots who call themselves politicians, did absolutely nothing. The first thing they should have, the prime minister should have hit television on Sunday morning or Monday morning and said, stay home. State of emergency. Just stay home. It makes no sense. Don't try to go. They had to rescue hundreds of people from the motorway who were stuck in their cars overnight. I mean, it's complete disregard for the public because guess what? Your government doesn't actually love you.
Well, I don't know about that. I think it's just incompetence. I think you're mixing up the two. You know, negligence and competence are kind of different.
Jeremy Clarkson's in trouble, typical English bloke from Top Gear. He was in Australia, and this.
Which one is that? Is that the big tall guy?
Yeah, the Ophi guy.
The blowhard?
Yeah, the blowhard, exactly. Yeah. But I love him because he's
the best blowhard guy. He carries the show. Yeah, he carries the show.
And, you know, he has his column, his weekly column. And right now they're on some form of a road show. And they were down in Australia and doing a press conference. And Clarkson, someone, I think they asked something about the Prime Minister of Australia. And Clarkson said, well, we've got our own one-eyed Scottish idiot. And what I didn't know is that Gordon Brown apparently is blind in one eye.
Oh, no.
So, of course, you know.
So every one-eyed guy in the industry.
Yeah, they all got fucking pissed off. All the medical people, all the handicapped people. Everyone's like, woo. So he apologized for it. And, you know, again, it goes, well, should he be let go and should we be fired?
Oh, brother.
Because they want total control of the airwaves because, you know, it's a little harder to put the BBC in the government here more than they are, like GE is in the government now in the U.S. They're trying to get the Freedom of Information Act. They're trying to find out how much the top radio presenters are paid, and the BBC refuses to tell anyone. You know what the total budget is, annual budget for BBC Radio?
No.
£460 million.
Wow, it's like $600 million for what? For radio?
For some stations.
Huh. Seems a little high.
And 70% of their salaries goes to the top people, to the presenters.
Huh. Sounds like a good business.
Hell yeah. So I'm a little pissed off at the president because I did have hope for change.
Oh, please.
When it came to medicinal marijuana.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me stop that. I don't know anything about what you're going to talk about, but let me give you my pre-take.
Okay.
It's called Dvorak's pre-take. We can get a jingle.
Wait a minute. Yeah, we should do that. It's a Dvorak's pre-take buzzkill in the morning.
So something like that. So here it is. Obama is a liberal Democrat by every stretch of the imagination. You know, I mean, just by the numbers. And we all know that. And he represents probably the group of people that would like to see medical marijuana more widely used and probably maybe even want marijuana legalized in this country because it is problematic. I think I have thoughts on this, but because of the Mexican thing and all these problems. So Obama is probably moving this agenda forward. And I would suspect probably by the next couple of years, marijuana will be decriminalized.
Well, I think you are entirely wrong, incorrect, because just look at what's happening around you. They're removing coffee shops from Amsterdam. Marijuana has been upgraded from a C-class to a B-class drug, now on par with heroin and cocaine in the United Kingdom. I disagree with you. And what's happening in the United States, medicinal marijuana is legal in the state of California. However, the Bush administration put into force some kind of trickery, whereas they could overrule the state's local laws if there was some national reason. So the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, has been raiding medicinal marijuana shops for 2 years now in California. And the president...
Well, let me guess. Obama's put a stop to it.
Well, a stop to the raids?
Yeah, he would, because that's him. That's what he would do.
Right. Well, Drug Enforcement Administration agents this week raided four medical marijuana shops in California, contrary to President Obama's campaign promises to stop the raids. Now, this pisses me off. I mean, you know, because
on that list of promises, he promised to stop the raids.
Yes. No, because he's. Here we go.
I'm not.
Here's what he said. Here's what he said.
I don't believe this story.
Yeah, sure. It's in the Washington Times. The president believes. Here's the quote. The president believes that federal resources should not be used to circumvent state laws. And as he continues to appoint senior leadership to fill out the ranks of the federal government, he expects them to review their policies with that in mind. Medical use of marijuana is legal under the law in California and a dozen other states, but the federal government under President Bush, bolstered by a 2005 Supreme Court ruling, argued that federal interests trumped state law. And it's still happening as of this week.
It'll end. I'm sure it's a mistake.
Well, let me give you another piece of data then. Because the person who's not going to fulfill your prophecy is, of course, Holder, the former lobbyist who is now Attorney General. Oops, he'll have to recuse himself, I guess. A lobbyist, ladies and gentlemen, a lobbyist is the Attorney General of the United States of America. After that,
How can that be? Wait a minute. I was under the impression that Obama wasn't going to put lobbyists.
Are you just playing this game because you think it sounds better, or is that the way should we do it that way? Like you're dumb because you're not.
I'm just stunned.
A bipartisan group of 16 members of Congress sent a letter Thursday to Attorney General Eric Holder urging him to allow the University of Massachusetts to grow its own marijuana for medical research. They're not allowed to.
What? Let me get the story straight. Dude, give me that one again.
Okay, so the story is that the University of Massachusetts wants to grow their own marijuana for research into its medicinal properties. And this is being blocked. It's been blocked. It's the same thing as the grow shops. The DEA is refusing this or not allowing this to happen. And now they're writing to Holder, and he's not going to do anything.
Well, you don't know that. I'm just saying. It just doesn't sound right. I mean, Obama's supposed to be...
That's where this quote came from.
Hmm. Well, it doesn't sound good.
No, of course not, because, well, it's amazing. It's just amazing the shit that is allowed compared to the stuff that isn't allowed.
Well, the thing that gets me is that this kind of thing is going on, you know, right under everybody's noses.
And no one's outraged but us.
Nobody's outraged but maybe you, me, and a few people that listen to us, who may or may not, you know, be outraged if it wasn't for us. You don't know. Mm-hmm. And that's the end of it. And then meanwhile, the Obama bots, which are all over the place, are still thinking this is the greatest thing ever happened to the country.
Yep.
In fact, they have jingles and tunes they've written.
They had that beautiful actress on Jonathan Ross last night. She's in Pushing Up Daisies, the TV series. I watched it once and I couldn't get through it. I don't like the premise. She's an English actress, and she was also in, she was in some good stuff. Chat room, help me out. Anyway, so beautiful, beautiful young woman, just stunning. And she, you know, she lives half the time in LA because she has a lot of work in Hollywood and half the time in London. And she says, "Boy, yeah, it was." And she's a complete Obama bot. It showed exactly what Hollywood is about. And she's like, "It was such a wonderful feeling. Everyone that day when he was nominated, and then we all knew that he was going to be president. And since then, it's just been a glorious feeling. We all feel the change. And my jaw went bong. Unbelievable. The prettiest chicks, man. They get the beautiful women. They get there. I think it's actually blondes." Are easier to hypnotize if you look at statistics. And I've been thinking a lot about this because we are under a form of hypnosis brought on primarily or sustained primarily, I would say, by celebrity cult of personality type culture. And we are hypnotized. We're more anesthetized than ever due to drugs that we're all taking, apparently. If it's not to make your penis big for hours, it's, you know, to make you sleep better or feel better or whatever. So we're literally drugged and we're hypnotized.
Kristen Chenoweth.
Oh, thank you. God, she'll be.
She has a big head.
No, Anna Friel is who it was. Anna Friel. F-R-E-I-L.
So thank they you. Have two different blondes on that show?
Anna Friel. Maybe she has dark hair in the show. Richard Drake just gave me that in the chat. Thanks.
Anna Friel has naturally dark hair, dark so hair. She's not a blonde.
Okay. Well, then the system's even better than I thought.
Oh, yeah. I've seen this girl before. She's stunning. A very pretty British
very pretty,
woman.
Very pretty. So their system is even better than I thought. And I consider myself, when I look back on my life, of which I've had some now, I'm a visionary. And that doesn't mean like, oh, you know, I can see in the future. But I do. And it's accelerating. Let me give you an example. So the
you're seeing it's all fractals.
It's well, yes, it's absolutely fractals, and maybe it's just my maybe I have an above normal fractal recognition capability. But now, thanks to you, actually, I'm starting to put that into perspective. But you know, I saw what the internet could be, and I acted upon it. I saw what online video could be. I saw the capabilities of online radio. You know, so that there's so many different things that I've seen, but it started to accelerate. At first, I was 10 years ahead, then I was 5 years ahead, then I was kind of this last venture, really 3 years ahead of all of this alternative media popping with video and audio and ways to monetize that. But now I'm seeing so clearly what is taking place around us, which a lot of people, this is the awakening and yeah, bullshit. Here's what it is.
Age of Aquarius.
There's a lot to that as well, but that's a separate topic.
2012 is coming.
No. That's not where I'm going with this.
I'm just gigging.
Where I'm going with it is a hypnotist will put in a keyword often, you know, and it's, or, you know, when I count to three and I say, wake up, you're going to wake up, you won't remember any of this. But he actually can wake people up and he can bring them back down under. I mean, that's not trickery. That this is for real. Right? You've seen hypnotists, John. They do it, right?
It appears so.
You hedge fund, you. So I now know why I can see things so clearly. I figured it out. I have my trick, and it's something that everyone can do, and it will help you see the true evil nature of the true rulers of the earth around us and what they're doing. And it's the rose-colored glasses, John. I figured it out. Because when you wear rose-colored glasses, as I have for...
Oh, this is very interesting. Now, I'm going to stop you right there because I have to mention to the people out there that, because I don't think anybody knows this, but you actually wear rose-colored... It's going to be... I could just see some chat rooms lighting up on this
crackpot and
you
the buzzkill.
You actually wear rose-colored glasses, and there's always a lot of references in the literature about seeing things through rose-colored glasses.
Yes. In fact, it started around 1871, I believe. I think it was a politician who was accused of seeing nothing but rose-colored... You know, seeing everything through rose-colored glasses. We should look up the...
Etymology, yeah.
Is that etymology or is that phraseology?
Well, could be either.
Well, you looked that up.
Take a look at the link I sent you, meanwhile.
Okay. But here's what I wanted to say. Hold on, let me take the link. Oh, but she has really long, curly hair. She was wearing a wig, probably.
Yeah,
Jonathan
probably.
Ross, but stunning. Beautiful, long legs, just... Blah, 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 blah. I won't go there. Anyway. It's not wearing the rose-colored glasses. It's when you take them off. That's when you can see it. Because the whole world for me is nice.
There's a couple
and
of science
rosy.
Fiction stories like this, by the way.
Really? Well, it's nice and it's and you know and I wear them almost all the time, but I take them off and I've noted and I started to think how does this really tie in? Can I corroborate this? I usually take my glasses off in meetings. And honestly, I feel very comfortable doing that for two reasons. One, because I can look someone in the eye and I can't see their face because I need glasses. And for some reason, it puts me more in tune with my thoughts and I'm listening more than I'm looking, although I'm sure I could get a lot of cues from looking. But still, it gives me, and it's even better, of course, if I put on non-rose-colored glasses to actually see the room, then you see the ugliness of what's actually taking place. So it's almost like I've oversensitized myself to a groovy shade, groovy colors, and I take it off, and then boom, then all of a sudden, all the real crud is much more visible. I'm going to start selling crackpot rose colored glasses, and they'll be $9.95, and they will have blue blocker capability.
You need that.
But I'm thinking this is the way to. Could you imagine droves of people wearing rose-colored glasses, and the scariest thing is not when they have them on, but when they take them off, because then you know they can see right through you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like the idea.
Thank you.
And you are actually a definitely a crackpot visionary.
Right. But visionary in the sense of, you know, I'm not brilliant. It's just I look at something.
Just that you're a little ahead of your time, just enough ahead of your time to do well. If you're too far ahead of your time, you can't never.
Exactly. And I've been.
Always reminded of the guy who was an interesting character because he was always so far ahead of his time. Is Tim O'Reilly of O'Reilly Media, mm-hmm. O'Reilly Publishing.
Yeah.
Besides coming up with his book company, he came up. He was on the World Wide Web.
He was on the Well days, right? Back in the days of the Well.
He caught the World Wide Web action immediately when it first was introduced and thought it was going to be the biggest thing ever. Because I had him on my radio show back in 93 and 94, and he was going on and on like crazy. And then he did the Global Network Navigator.
GNN, of course. I remember that. It was a book, but it wasn't also a gopher site?
It was something between a browser and a portal. It was actually probably the first portal. Anyway, so he had that, and he sold that, I think, to AOL or CompuServe or somebody like that. And he was kind of in on the whole thing, saw everything coming, knew where it was headed, got in, got his Global Navigator thing started, and then was out onto something else before the internet ever hit. It was hilarious. I mean, if he had done all that stuff 5 years later, like in the late 90s when you were just there throwing money at everybody, I mean, it wouldn't have even been funny how much he'd been worth.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to say I'm Tim O'Reilly, but I do look at something like the internet and then it draws me like a magnet. I've always been a little bit on the early side, so I've never made silly, stupid billions of dollars. I've done quite okay for myself, and most of it with actual work, which
helps.
Yeah, you know, I'm not one of those guys who creates phony companies that are based upon a valuation that has nothing to do with making money. If a company doesn't make money, it's no good to me.
Yeah, well, that model's not working, if you haven't noticed right now, because they don't have any IPOs because of Sarbanes-Oxley, which is put in place to screw things up, just like the interest rate deal.
Exactly. And the wonderful state of California, besides not handing out tax refund checks, now, what was it, they had the day off? They closed everything on, was it Monday?
I think it was Friday.
Friday. Yeah. DMV closed. Schwarzenegger's emergency services offices was closed. 200,000 state employees forced to take the day off. Turn down your speakers a little bit, John. I'm getting some feedback. And this, what do they call it? Furlough? Is that what they call it?
Furlough. Yeah, that's a good one.
$42 billion budget shortfall. See, what people don't understand is that when there's no money, you know, guess what? It actually happens that there's no money. And when there's no money, then this is the danger. Yes, we have hundreds of thousands of state employees who are in deep shit. They're already making less money and they've had all kinds of cuts and they're going to get laid off. But when the welfare checks don't come because there's just no money, that's when there is a panic. And all I hear is, I see Schwarzenegger, I see him saying, state of emergency, hello, hello, help, help, we're messed up, we're going down the tubes here, there's no one talking about it, there's no talk of lifelines, there's 40 other states that are in the same position.
Yeah, well, California's in bad shape. They're stopping projects and they're losing $32 million a day on unemployment benefits.
But they're going to have to cut that.
Probably wouldn't hurt if the state was more pro-business than it actually is. Mm. Hey, by the way, talking about something came to mind, if you don't mind me changing the subject.
Oh, go for it.
So Bill Gates goes down to Long Beach with a box full of mosquitoes and releases them.
I knew you were going to do this. This is the TED Talk, right?
We have multiple violations of state and federal laws here. You cannot import into California disease vectors.
Well, first of all, here's what happened. On one of those TED Talks, if you've never seen him, go to TED.com, and you can see Bill Gates doing this. And I watched it because I knew – actually, you sent me an email about it, so I knew you were going to bring it up. And he's talking about malaria, And he says, well, let me just show you, hundreds of millions of people dying until we discovered it was mosquitoes that were passing it around. And I brought some with me. And he opens up a canister, and you can't really see it on the video, but apparently there's mosquitoes that then start to fly around. So are you really believing that, A, these were imported mosquitoes, and B, that they were possibly infected with malaria?
No, I don't think they had malaria, but the mosquitoes have something like 50 or more. I have a list that was sent to me by somebody who's actually filed complaints with the CDC, the California Department of Agriculture, and two or three other agencies which control this sort of activity. You're not supposed to do this, especially in California, an agricultural state where we don't want people bringing
fruit
these
flies.
Kinds of
it. Fruit flies.
Well, whatever.
Yeah.
And so he just callously does it as a gag.
Yeah,
and I want to see what happens, because it seems to me that there's a there's a fine involved here, and they might as well fine a guy who's got plenty of money. But I'd like to see what comes of this. But I've been watching all these news stories, and nobody brings this up.
Yeah. Well,
it's like, hello.
The punchline, the reason he opened this up, and then the punchline was, there's no reason only poor people should get it. You know, so it was a quasi threat. Well, of course, nothing will happen, because it's like Martha Stewart. You know, the true evil people never get punished. And I have really put my doubts next to Bill Gates' name with his foundation. Storing seeds. Going to live in Paraguay with the Bushes.
Yeah, so let's go talk about that. So I guess we got one of our listeners is in Paraguay.
Let me bring up his name so we can ID him. Go ahead.
And he sent some note about something or other. And we went back and forth with him, mainly because I'd love to go to Paraguay just to, you know, check it out.
Christian Benitez.
Yeah, it's just got to be very picturesque.
Hey, man, you're breaking up. What the hell is that? You fucking router.
No, I don't think so. Mm. Anyway, let me get back on track and see if we can start over. Anyway, so this guy is... he mentions that the Bushes have, you know, because we all know that the Bushes have bought land down there, because it came up in the conversation sometime last year as a, you know, as though there was going to be a revolution in the United States and they were going to go to Paraguay to live. But it turns out they actually bought an investment. They own like most of the aquifer.
Yeah, El Aquifer Guarani, the biggest water reservation in Paraguay.
So they basically have bought a
well.
They basically pulled, like, you know that movie Chinatown?
Oh, God.
I don't know. Have I got an investment for you?
Yeah. Every day you slip over to the dark side. I like it.
Anyway, so I found that amusing.
FEMA food kits may contain tainted peanut butter. That's from CNN.
Well, that's a good one.
Yeah, let me just see what the give you the whole story. Food kits recently distributed as part of disaster relief effort in Kentucky and Arkansas, which, in case you didn't know, there's some bad shit going down there too, may contain peanut butter contaminated with salmonella linked to a nationwide outbreak, the Federal Emergency Management Agency said Wednesday. Commercial meals kits manufactured by Red Cloud Food Services, under the Standing Rock label, that's what a joke that is, have been provided to disaster survivors in impacted communities, and these kits may contain peanut butter, which is part of the precautionary national recall underway in accordance with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FEMA said in a written statement.
So as the CEO of the company that made all this,
has he been hanged yet? Has he been shot?
Has he been arrested? You know, is he going to arrest him? Is he going to go to jail?
You don't hear about that, do you?
Never.
It's a Peanut Corp of isn't it Peanut Corp of America?
It's Peanut Grinders of Georgia. So I don't know who they are. I can't remember.
Well, this is part of the problem.
It's not part of the problem. Peanut. Part of the problem is that the media is not covering, you know, they're not outraged enough. I mean, everyone gets all carried away about, well, let's do the recalls, but nobody says, what about the CEO and the executives who made the decision to keep producing crappy peanut butter that ended up killing people? How come they're not in jail?
I'm looking at I'm doing a Google news search. Stuart Parnell.
Bernie Madoff's not in jail.
Well, here it
How
is.
Come Martha Stewart went to jail?
Because they were not in the game. That's the whole. That is the whole point. We're not in the game. We are the ones that are going to have the smart grid blanketed over us, and we become fucking batteries for these people. Batteries. That's all we are. And batteries have a certain shelf life, and then it's done. Here we go. This is the guy.
That's a possibility for a T-shirt.
I'm a battery.
I'm a battery.
I'm a battery for the New World Order.
I'm a battery for the New World Order. Good, I like it.
Yeah. No. You just make it official battery for the New World Order, and on the back or on the front, you have a you draw like a battery, like a AA battery with the top that's near your neck, right, and the bottom. You just have a fucking battery with connect here. So this guy's name is, hold on. We might as well shame him. John. CEO. What not found? Hey, this is weird. Stuart Parnell, owner and president. Let me Google his name. Stuart Parnell, owner and president of Peanut Corp of America. You know this guy's just walking around. You know he's just free. Even though the FDA says that he knowingly this company sold the tainted shit. Knowingly. Unbelievable. Lynchburg News. Okay, this is local, which of course is much better. Lynchburg company makes few comments about outbreak. Peanut Corporation of America was founded in 1976 by Stuart Parnell and his father, Hugh, who has since retired but remains in the area. The most recent statement, January 13th, Parnell said, "We understand the seriousness of the situation that our company faces with the current product recall crisis, and we deeply regret that these circumstances are causing distress to our customers, our employees, and our customers, consumers." Jesus. So your answer is he's just hanging out.
Yeah, figures.
It's sad.
So
isn't
what
it?
what other depressing news do we have for the public?
Well, actually, I wanted to, because you said that the last show I ended on such a downer. I actually feel really good because I feel that I want to make a short term prediction. I believe that Monday we're going to witness a significant shift in the markets. This will come right along with this bill being passed, but I believe probably the 13th, I may just be right. I didn't think I was going to make it. I think we will see a massive, massive crash around the 13th of February, and it's all coming together simultaneously, and it's all orchestrated in my mind.
Well, let's see. We're doing a show
But wait. So let me finish the thought. So this means that all the things that we've been talking about, or certainly that we've been talking about together for over a year now, John, episode number 70, and what I've been doing for even longer on the Daily Source Code. So now watch our numbers go up, because people are going to start saying, shit, these guys were right. You should go listen to them. And it's not the dawning of the age of Aquarius, but so now we got to hunker down, and we're all going to be pretty much equal. Because your money's going to be worth shit, at least for a while. My money, your money, anybody's money.
You have gold.
Well, yes, I do have gold, so I'm going to be okay. But I'm not going to. I don't have all my money in gold. It's just can't. So.
All right. Well, I'm not convinced there's going to be some sort of a crash on the 13th. But that's maybe if there is a hopefully it won't go below that November 20th number. But. Let's assume that would be probably the launch point for the economy to go up.
No, I think we're in too deep a hole. So the British model that the U.S. is now following, all things being equal, if I were to recommend any way out of this. The idea of a bad bank is probably the closest thing to not nationalizing, but, making something happen. Oh, and by the way, no longer offering free money through the Federal Reserve. That would probably be a way to go. But now they're choosing the British model, following the one-eyed Scottish idiot, according to Jeremy Clarkson, which is become an insurer for the banks. Now, if you follow synthetic credit default options, which is more nothingness on a spreadsheet, this is maybe $100 trillion dollars worth of shit. So if a bank goes out of business, all this stuff is going to have to start coming. It's really going to have to unravel, because the same people who got us into this will once again be standing there with their hands saying, where's my money? And the taxpayers will be on the hook for this.
Right. What's really happened, especially with all those, you're right, is these credit default swaps still out there. And there's lots of them, and nobody knows what they're valued at, because it's an unregulated sub-industry.
Yeah, well, I've heard 40 to 50
The banks that are holding these things, or anybody holding them, they should just go bankrupt.
Well, so that I think that's the problem there, is then everything unwinds in the same way, with the only difference being, yes, if you just let them go bankrupt, and I'll say it again, that capitalism without bankruptcy is like religion without hell, then we would go through some serious deep shit times, but nothing compared to also being publicly liable and have to pay people back. I mean, that will really decimate everything. And so I think that when I hear you say, well, this is interesting, or this is a little bit different, and it's never quite been seen this way, that's what is different about this, and why I don't think your cycle, I think your cycle is just coming a little bit earlier than you believe it's coming.
Yeah, I'm not buying that yet necessarily, but it's possible. But again, the one thing that's interesting about studying all these cycles is that every time something happens, every time there's an economic downturn that is major and important, it always takes a different form. The last time we had a really bad situation was in the 70s, where we had something out of the blue. Nobody had ever seen it before. Nobody even knew what to call it. And they finally invented the term stagflation.
Right.
Because it didn't make any sense, but with old-fashioned economic analysis, that this possibility would exist, which is that you have no interest in anybody buying anything, but prices are going up.
Yep.
How do you do that? How does that work? It made no sense. That brought in Milton Friedman, who explained it with his supply side stuff. But now that doesn't explain what's going on now. And there'll be another new famous economist that'll crop up. They always tend to be older, and they die during the era of their theory peaking, which would happen with Friedman, and it happened to the guy before him, and Keynes, and you can go back to Ricardo and everybody in between, and go back to Karl Marx. He was also instrumental in the 1850s, 60s.
Right. Well, it's mainly the Chicago School of Economics. Those are the guys that
was kind of running things currently. But there'll be a new guy cropping up with a great explanation for everything. It'll be an older guy who'll die probably 15 years from now, and it'll make sense. But we haven't seen the whole thing shake out yet for anyone to deconstruct. So we're still in the holding pattern here. I'm confident, based on my studies, that we should still have at least a 2-year boom, and is modeling, looking at the way it unfolded in 1890. That's kind of what I'm thinking. I'm hoping.
I have to go look at that. Well, 1890, a lot of that's that. Well, so this is why I'm so positive, because in around 1890, that's when we had Tesla, that's when we had Edison, that's when we had a whole bunch of really amazing people come up with amazing shit. If only this time around we can protect them, so the next generation doesn't have to go through, don't have to go through 100 years of stifling of real innovation and human prosperity and using our brains in more ways than one, i.e. not being batteries.
We have those same kind of people today. We've got Bill Gates, Scott McNeely, John Doerr. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm
trying to be funny here, but I couldn't come up with enough silly names.
No, I understand what you're saying, but I appreciate it. I've opened up all the boxes. My bookcase is finally in, and I was I love books. If you ever want to give me a present, just give me a book. And so I keep books, the ones that I like the most. And I have one here from 19... When was this given to me? Well, anyway, it was given to me by a senior banker at Bankers Trust because we were doing a derivatives trading system for them, and it's called Understanding Swaps.
Ooh.
And it's a it's just, I love reading this book again. You know,
maybe those two women from the SEC should have read that book.
You know, no other market is, chapter one, no other market in financial history has grown as rapidly or evolved as quickly as the swaps markets. From 1979, their initial inception, 1979, notional principal outstandings have grown from virtually nothing to over $5 trillion. $5 trillion. Now, this book was published in 96, probably.
Wow. What's the name of this book again?
Understanding Swaps.
And who's the author?
Marshall. Hold on. There's a couple of authors here. John F. Marshall, professor of finance. And
where?
Graduate School of Business, St. John's University, New York. Kenneth R. Kapner.
That's okay. I just need the one name. There's a famous name on there.
Those two guys. Yeah, Jack Marshall and Ken Kapner. But even when this book was published, already $5 trillion. Can you imagine what it really is? It's got to be $500 trillion by now. It's got to be.
Well, let's see. I forget when the guy says the Madoff thing, the guy testifying against Madoff or against the SEC.
We should know his name, and we should repeat his name.
It starts with an M.
Well, we should repeat his name over and over and over because this is the Paul Revere of our time.
It's on this piece of paper. It's
with the rest
Markopoulos.
Of you. Markopoulos.
Markopoulos. Markopoulos.
Markopoulos.
Markopoulos.
Markopoulos. Markopoulos. Like Acropolis, only Markopoulos.
Yeah, Markopoulos.
Markopoulos Acropolis. Well, he should have an Acropolis named after him.
And apparently, I guess he knows of another $1 billion Ponzi scheme that's out there that he's going to...
But that's a fractal going down. We need to look at the fractals going up because you just don't have a $50 billion fractal sticking out of space for no reason without something above it, as John Brown says in the chat room, probably 1.4 quadrillion in swaps out there. I believe it.
You never know. Somebody, those yachts are expensive.
Have you ever seen those mothers, man? Those things are...
I saw them in Monte Carlo, and I've seen a lot of photos. You know, Paul Allen has three of them.
But with two helicopters on it, that just blows me away.
Yeah, what do you need two helicopters? One for each foot?
It's just
like a lot of them have a couple of helicopters and a submarine.
I'm very interested in personal submersibles. The Amsterdam police have one that they use in the canals. It's a one-man submarine, which is just the cutest thing ever. And what they use it for is to go around and see if people aren't dumping human waste from their boats into the canals or into the rivers. So they're literally spying under you to see if you're pooping in the water. but it's a beautiful little sub. It's just, you know, like,
up in the Microsoft territory in Washington State. I haven't followed them for years, but I remember seeing they called American Submarine, and they were trying to commercialize submarines instead of buying a speedboat, you'd buy one of these things.
Yeah, I've seen some of those companies, and they were like a yacht, like a serious yacht sized submarine.
Yeah.
That would, like 10 knots or something, 12 knots underwater, you know, like some serious, serious hardware, you know, $80 or $90 million. Sure. I'm sure that it's available if you want it.
Wonder who would own one of those things.
Well, only someone who has acquired massive amounts of money. And I guess the only way you can get that kind of money is by cheating. Doesn't that sound kind of right?
Yeah, either that or you. There's probably some elements of that in any one of those super fortunes. I mean, let's take a look at Bill. You know, and he's the world's richest man for a while, and he basically scammed some guy out of MS DOS for $50,000 and built his fortune around that,
mm-hmm.
and then. played dirty football throughout most of the run-up of this Microsoft stock when it was, you know, doing well.
There you go.
In fact, one story I remember I was told by one of the lawyers that used to work with Gary Kildall was that Microsoft was almost going to go out of business for a while until they went to Gary to get a license for CPM and manufacture what was an add-in card, a CPM card that you put in the Apple II to run CPM programs on an Apple.
Really?
Yeah, it was a Microsoft, it's called a soft card.
Huh.
Microsoft saved the company with that because Kildall didn't want to license CPM to anybody, but they talked him into it and he felt he could do them a favor and save the company. He saved the company, and the next thing you know, Microsoft does everything it can to screw
CPM.
Over.
Yeah, of course.
Digital Research, CPM, and, you know, but mainly GEM, the operating system. They came up with a graphical user interface operating system called GEM.
GEM, yes, I remember that.
That they were signing deals with left and right, and Microsoft, this guy says, you know, they said they'd go in and sign a deal, and they'd see Bill go in there like a week later and queer the deal, one after another. GEM never went anywhere, and then, you know, CPM and Gary ended up, Gary ended up dead. On a weird bar stool incident in Monterey, I think.
Really? You know, that is deemed as pornographic in the United Kingdom.
What?
A weird bar stool accident.
Anyway, so...
I'd just like to thank all of the No Agenda and Daily Source Code listeners for sending me the audio recording of Flight 1549. Yes, thank you. I have heard it.
We played it.
Yeah, it's just thousands of emails. And I just want to say the following about it. So I listened to the NTSB version. It's pretty funny. There's a guy who comes on and says, "My name is John Bubba. I'm from the NTSB. I certify that this is the true recording." And then subsequently, the whole thing is edited. Because you can hear it. You literally hear the static fade in, you know, which is not the way typical... the reception works on aircraft communications. So they're fading it in and out, whatever. Besides the fact that the pilot, and I find this very, very strange, very strange. There's one thing when you're flying, and again, I've been an aviator for a number of years. I have thousands of hours to my name, fixed wing and rotary. I've been around. I've flown in America. I've flown in Holland, France, Germany, the United Kingdom. Messing up your call sign is like a big no-no, and there's a couple of reasons for it. Even if I have my call sign November 277 Delta Sierra, if there's someone out there that is Golf November 275 Delta Sierra, the controller will mention it specifically. Just so you know, Delta Sierra, he'll give me then an abbreviation. There is another Delta Sierra out there. I'm going to call him this, right? So the captain calls himself Flight Cactus 1539. The controller repeats it as Cactus 1529. The actual flight number, according to all press, is 1549. Okay? It's on radar. The radar screen will actually show the flight number. How can the captain, the pilot in command, mess up his call sign? Okay, maybe because his engines went out, whatever. That is highly suspicious. I don't just gloss over it. I think there's something very messed up with that. It's just wrong. And it's confusing. And that alone is a dangerous situation where you have, at least in communication, two different versions of the flight number. Now, second, the general consensus amongst aviators out there is that this is really an Airbus problem. The Airbus, unlike Boeing, is totally fly-by-wire. The computer controls everything. So when the pilot thrusts up his engines, he's not in direct contact with the engines. He's in direct contact with something called a FADEC. And the FADEC stands for fully authorized digital engine controller. So the computer is authorized to make decisions about the throttle. So let's just presume the bird strike is real and something got ingested into the engines. The general theory is that the Airbus computer decided to shut down the engines, which may not have been necessary. You don't necessarily blow up or fall out of the sky if you ingest a bird, and a double bird strike like this is already so highly unlikely. So, strange. Third thing, and then I'm never going to talk about it again because it'll come out one day, and then I'll do a neener. Third thing, as you're listening to the cockpit recordings, not until the very end, remember, this is an Airbus without engines gliding through the sky. Engines are out. The computer has shut down the engines. You do not hear a single warning bell, prox, nothing. Not a single thing is going off in that cockpit until the very, very end when he says, you'll find us in the Hudson, and you hear what to me sounds more like a stall warning, but there I can hear some sound. But all the while, I do not hear anything in this cockpit. So I don't like those three things. I'm happy that everyone got down safely. I think it's a great feat by the crew, which I include the flight attendants because they're there really for your safety, not to serve you a drink, you stupid, lazy bastard. And it stinks to high hell. It stinks. And I'm never going to talk about it again. But one day you'll see that it was stinky.
Nah, they'll never come out. You left out the other thing, or unless there was another version of the recording that included it, which was the controller saying the pilot has said he's had a bird strike, but he never did.
No, I went back and I listened to it. I listened to the original recording, and he says bird strike, lost thrust.
Oh, then the guy says he's lost both engines. Did he ever say that?
Yeah, because I was listening.
Just wondering.
No. That felt good to me. That felt
right.
Like, I will say, there's a couple things. So the sequence doesn't really make sense because, you know, the pilot basically says, I want to come back. And the guy says, okay. And then he says, I couldn't get it for you. And I'm not quite sure what he couldn't get. It seems like I'm missing something where someone says, you know, you can't come back. You can't land on this runway. Because he calls someone. But that part, and I'm pretty good at listening to the radio and hearing those communications. There was something weird about it. The whole thing is just weird.
Here's what I'd be on the lookout for. There were a number of executives from the Bank of America on that plane.
Yep.
Now, if any how many?
30.
If any of these people show up dead in the next, let's say, year under mysterious circumstances, especially if more than one of them do.
Yeah.
There may be something to that.
Yeah, no, I think I told you that theory was that it's warring bank factions. It's basically the Vatican Roman bankers versus the Jewish bankers.
Didn't tell me the Vatican.
Yeah, no, because it was remember we talked about this. The Bank of America came initially from an Italian bank.
Well, it was actually an American bank called the Bank of Italy.
Yeah, but in San Francisco, right?
Yeah,
but all that money came from. I mean, that's the version that's out there. Is that it was Italian?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a economic hitman stuff.
It was interestingly on the same day that they went to the government to say, "Hey, we need another $18 billion to buy Merrill Lynch," which they got.
Maybe somebody has something on the government, you know. Maybe one of those executives is knows too much.
Well, anyway, so
I don't know. Hey, just thinking. I apologize to the Bank of America executives for implying that they.
That's okay because we all know, John.
They're white folks, and then they're ignorant motherfuckers like you.
Yes.
Oh boy, we could go on for hours, but let's not.
No, we'll be back on Thursday. We'll be back on the Thursday.
Yeah, so we're going to try and do Thursday and Sundays in the morning. In the morning.
And we'll have our jingles, hopefully, by next week.
If you can write them for me, I think I can probably get.
Yeah, I'll have them. I'll have them done to this weekend. Yeah, I got a bunch of things to do. I also got to put my list of donors on the blog and the a couple other things I got to do. I'm behind in my work.
And why don't you open up an Amazon account for us?
We'll sell books
or no Amazon a PayPal account or something for the show.
Yeah, I have a PayPal account I'm using now to collect money, but we can set up a separate one, or I can just set up a subdomain on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I trust you, right? You know.
Yeah, it's all
as far as I can throw you.
Everybody's got the image of you trying to throw some big fat guy.
Yeah, because I think what we're going to do is we're not going to take any advertisement. But you know what will happen is after the events of this coming week, we're going to have to do 3 shows a week just to keep people sane, to keep them from going out and killing. You know, we're going to have to continue to unveil the mask as we disconnect the batteries of the New World Order.
There we go. I like that one.
That's a good one, isn't it? Disconnecting the batteries of the New World Order.
Yeah,
it's
like
Crackpot
it.
And the Buzzkill on the lookout. Yeah. Write that down so Dave can cut
I'm
that.
I'm writing it down now as we speak.
Okay. And I still got work to do. Jeez. Anyway.
We got through a few things. It was a good show.
Yeah. Coming to you from Southwest London in Gitmo Nation East, in the basement of Curry Terrace, I'm Adam Curry.
I'm on the hill in Northern Silicon Valley, the Gitmo Nation.
We'll talk to you again next week. What was your name again?
John C. Dvorak.
We'll talk to you again next Thursday, right here on No Agenda.